Now, here's your host, Tom Donahue, an investigative broadcaster and a man on a mission.
Good day and welcome, America and beyond. I'm Tom Donahue for Tom Donahue Reports, and I want to pick up from the last program where I discussed Trump being the inciter-in-chief, and because he was the inviter, and he was the inciter of the Capitol chaos that occurred. And so that incursion, because it really wasn't an insurrection, but it was an incursion, it was a protest that got out of hand, there was an element of violence. It wasn't perpetrated by all the participants, but I did want to go back to something I said. I kind of planted a seed, but I mentioned that Trump was a coward because he didn't proceed up the hill, because he did say that he would join the protesters, you know, the gatherers, his supporters. He did not. And I knew that Kimberly Guilfoyle and Don Jr. and Ivanka, they were all, they had music on, and they had this song, which I don't like at all, Gloria, and a little bit of dancing, and I'm like, this is kind of weird. And Trump was in the background. Well, as you all are well aware now, in the last few months, it came out during the hearings, the testimony from certain White House staffers, that Trump ordered the Secret Service to take him up the hill by limousine, which would make sense. And they apparently, according to White House staffers, and I guess the Secret Service to some extent, said that they told him no for security reasons, that they could not guarantee his safety. And he said, well, they're my people. I don't have to worry about that. Just like when he said that, I guess the Secret Service before this all happened, were looking into like trying to keep a perimeter and trying to keep these people out. And Trump at that time even said, hey, even if they have guns, they're my people. I don't have to worry. But that's, they have a job to do. And it's to protect the president at all costs, regardless of what he says or what he thinks or what he feels. So anyway, as you are well aware, there were these White House staffers, and some of them high-level staffers, that claimed that not only did Trump demand they take him up to join the protest of the election and the Electoral College process, something that has to be done, you know, that has to be executed, constitutionally speaking. So not only is Trump livid, believing that Mike Pence could change the outcome, that he could actually do more than something ceremonial, which actually is untrue, and he had no constitutional grounds to warrant that or to support that claim. But nevertheless, Trump wanted Pence to do so. Pence, actually being, you know, quite learned in the Constitution and been a constitutional conservative for, you know, so long and a devout Christian, he just refused to follow Trump's orders, execute his duty based on what he believed the Constitution demanded of him, which was very little. Trump actually, you know, so he wasn't a coward. He actually did want to go. But not only was there, I guess, some colorful language and some shouting, you know, some yelling. And again, this has not been substantiated, but the claim, allegation is that Trump actually grabbed the Secret Service driver and started to strangle him because he was so angry, refused his order, and would not take him, drive him up the hill. Whether that's true or not, the bottom line is Trump actually did want to join them. And you want to talk about chaos, that would have been really chaotic. So, and Trump also, it would have given stronger so-called evidence to charge him as the leader of an insurrection, even though I don't believe it was, quote-unquote, an insurrection. People that were more than just being disorderly in their conduct. To clarify that point is that Trump actually wasn't a coward. He was going to join the group. He wanted to join the group. He was commanding the Secret Service to take him up the hill. So when I heard that during the testimony, I was like, are you kidding me? I mean, he really actually did want to go. Like, wow, just imagine that. Beyond that point, I wanted to bring up the fact that Trump, in early December 2022, just weeks ago, Trump called for suspending the Constitution because of his anger over the fact of what he believes to be a stolen election and the fact that he's been unsuccessful in the courts, unsuccessful and even in the court of public opinion to prove out that point. Now, I just want to be clear. There's no question there was widespread voter fraud, irregularities, and the process was flawed. And COVID had that influence on states deciding to extend the goalpost in terms of how you could vote and how much time was available to you and how and where you could drop it off. And so all those things contributed, because in most general elections, if you have one day and you have absentee balloting, there's a lot of lazy people, a lot of people that are forgetful, a lot of people that just are not motivated or inspired to get up and vote. But you give people a whole month and you keep being reminded, and people make it easy for you, and they'll drive you there, or they'll drop it off for you, or they'll help you fill out a ballot, or whatever the case is. Okay, so we had that. Then we also had the case of people that their hatred was so extreme for Trump that they were willing to risk any kind of charges to commit voter fraud. But as I brought up in previous programs, Trump did not win the election. And it's not because Biden was more popular. Strategically, Biden is beloved, believe it or not, because I live in Pennsylvania, beloved in many parts of Pennsylvania because he spent so much time here, not just his childhood time in Scranton, but he was there at the University of Pennsylvania and the Independence Hall and the Constitution Center and so many different Philadelphia functions. People got to know him. And many of them were fooled by him, you know, good old lunch bucket Joe, and believing that, you know, Biden's one of them. So remember, Trump narrowly beat Hillary. Extremely detestable and unlikable. And so I'm thinking, you know, based on what I know about Pennsylvania politics, the demographics and political loyalties and all that, I was somewhat surprised that he even beat Hillary. So I knew Trump did not or could not beat Biden in Pennsylvania. All the unforced errors, he's his own worst enemy. He continues to get in his own way of his successes. One step forward, two steps backwards of the China virus. The fact that, you know, that definitely played a role in hindering his reelection. And so there were a lot of factors. In Pennsylvania, Joe Biden's ties are so strong. And there are a lot of folks here, which unless you live here and you see how Biden has been treated by the media, and all the visits and all the stories of his boyhood home and upbringing in Scranton and then living so close by in Delaware, I just knew that Biden was a shoo-in in Pennsylvania. And as I mentioned earlier, it became readily apparent that there was no need for rampant voter fraud. But the abject hatred, you know, the vile nature of the extreme hatred for Trump, it drove so many people, you know, Trump derangement syndrome, to sheer madness. And so they were going to try to ensure by any and all means that Trump did not win the state of Pennsylvania or other states for that matter. But it wasn't needed. It wasn't necessary because based on my knowledge of Pennsylvania and its demographics and voter trends and habits and allegiances and alliances, I just knew that he was not going to win Pennsylvania like when he narrowly beat Hillary. And again, it was very narrow. And you also have to realize that these rallies don't represent the entire population. That's like looking at a big football stadium and thinking that everybody is a fan of football or soccer or baseball. It's not the case. Some people don't even care. They couldn't even tell you what the score was. So the first go around, people were still becoming familiar with Trump the politician, or at least becoming a politician versus Trump the character on The Apprentice, or Trump the businessman that would appear as a guest on certain roundtables or talk shows. You know, celebrity stories on Inside Edition or Page Six or whatever. Those people weren't a lock that went out to the rallies in 2015 and 16. 99%, maybe really close to 100% of all the people that went out to the rallies were already going to vote for him. So really, those rallies, except for just exciting the base, did not garner new voters unless people saw, like, the rallies on television and, you know, social media and whatnot, and maybe there was some influence that way. But I just thought there were other ways that he could have been more successful in campaigning. And, you know, we've gone over a lot of those things. And the Trump fatigue syndrome is a term that I coined. It certainly played a role, because there are some people, and I'm sure you've met some of them, that said they would not vote for Trump, even if it meant higher gas prices, even if it meant a failed economy. They were tired of these headlines and the chaos and the conflict and the tumult. They wanted it to end. So even people voted against their own best financial and personal interest because they just couldn't take any more from Trump, which is pretty sad. I mean, now I can see the argument for voting against Trump. But back then, in terms of policies, it benefited the majority of the population. Things were pretty good. But anyway, so when you look at some of the other states, these elections were certified by Republican governors, and some of these election laws that were based on so-called COVID protocols and other kinds of nonsensical reasons. Many of them were Republican legislatures that were controlled, or governors, or board of electors, or supervisors, or whatever. If Trump was going to make sure that there was integrity in elections, he should have had an integrity election force, whether it be the legal side or the enforcement side, and in monitoring these elections and trying to work with legislatures and work with especially the Republicans to ensure that it was a fair election and that election laws were not bent or broken, which they were. So the process was completely flawed. And so it did undermine the election. But if the legislatures and the governors are okay with that and they sign on to that, what are you going to do? And then the court said, well, you know, we're not going to overturn them, even though there were some later rulings that said, hey, you really shouldn't do that. But they weren't going to redo the elections. It's unfortunate the way things panned out. Again, I just want to reiterate that I'm not here to win any popularity contests. I'm not here to just cater to what I think you want me to say and what you want to hear. You're finding out more and more of the truth from Hannity's text and some of the reactions from Hannity and Laura and all that when they were in panic mode, when Trump let the chaos go on. I think it was 186 or 187 minutes without his involvement, when he was still fuming over what he believes to be a stolen election, and he believes that he was robbed of the presidency, and that he believes he won the election. And he has a right to believe those things, as Trump is sometimes, you know, being a narcissist, sometimes having these personality disorders, you know, a temper that can get the best of him. When he made the statement that it was okay, you know, I mean, he was calling for actually not just okay, but he was calling for the termination of parts of the United States Constitution because of the outcome of the election. I mean, I cannot believe that any president, but in particular presidents that are believed to be patriotic, that are to be conservatives, constitutionalists, populists, would ever call for anything within the Constitution to be suspended. So that's a pretty radical concept, and it's completely unjustifiable to say that or to state that. So you have that. Then how about a month or two prior to that, you have Trump seemingly, he's defending the Saudis, the Saudi Arabians, for the LIV tour, you know, because his ties to golf, you know, the golf courses and all that. The families, the survivors of 9/11, the victims, they were speaking out and just saying, how can Trump do business? How could he be supportive of Saudi Arabia, golf or otherwise? And Trump said, well, we really don't know the entire story, what role or what responsibility they may have had. And I'm like, hello, almost every single hijacker was a Saudi, okay? As president, now he did release some of the JFK files, but he could have released all of them, with the exception of maybe just a few redactions. He didn't do that. And I know those in the paranormal community and UFOs, he could have released all that with a few, very minor few, redactions. And then, more importantly, why didn't he get to the bottom and release all pertinent documents that related to the Saudi connections and maybe other rogue government agencies and New World Order types or Dark Order types. He did not do that. And so it's extremely disappointing for someone that would put golf courses, financial wherewithal and contracts and those kinds of things over patriotism and over those that bear to some degree responsibility for 9/11. And for someone calling for the suspension of the Constitution because I didn't win, you little baby. And then I've mentioned many other reasons that Trump has disappointed us and again, he's just allowed his dysfunctional and narcissistic personality to destroy his legacy. Now, I'm not in any way forgiving the liberal, progressive, insane press, the dishonest press, you know, the fake and fraudulent press, for what they did to this man, okay? Why did he volunteer for so many of those interviews to put his head on the chopping block over and over and over again? Why did he hire globalists and New World Order people in this cabinet and people that were considered liberal and progressive and not loyal, totally disloyal? And why did he have all the leaks and loose lips? Trump's got to take stock of his own actions, his own failings, and realize that most of the blame goes back to him for what he has said, for what he has done. But again, I'm not in any way absolving the media, the corporate, progressive, insane media, for what they did to him. It's a disgrace. There'll be a lot of other subjects I want to get to, a lot of more things I want to address. But, you know, I'm tired of talking about his failings and his flaws and the fact that his legacy is so tarnished now that he's become a caricature of himself. But again, this liberal press and NBC, they created this man. They gave him to us through, you know, their television programming, namely, primarily, the, you know, Celebrity Apprentice and The Apprentice. So thank you very much. Hey, at least we got some good years out of Trump, and we appreciate that. And we, you know, we'll just leave it on a good note that there were a lot of good things accomplished, and it's sad that, you know, things ended the way they did. I'm Tom Donahue for Tom Donahue Reports. Thanks so much for joining us.